The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It's Monday, the 31st of July, 2023, and we are closing out Independence Month with a What's in the News show. I've got two topics I want to talk about this morning. First, boat registration fees increase and lobster price could turn into the perfect storm for local fishermen. And the second story is on the headlines today. People, too risky to run all engines at once. That's what we're talking about today once we get the show opened. We're going to talk about Montague Ramp and dock, some of the issues that the fishermen and the businessmen, entrepreneurs, are facing in that space. I've got a new Sand Dollar giveaway for you. It's going to be a great show. Let me start with our Sand Dollar Live read. The Central Bank of the Bahamas is pleased to announce the extension of its rebate program to AML Foods Limited. That's Solomon's Food Stores and Fresh Markets. Beginning this Thursday and running every Thursday and Friday through the month of August, customers using their Sand Dollar-enabled digital wallet at the designated Solomon's locations will have the opportunity to receive instant cash rebates. So this week, Thursday the 3rd and Friday the 4th of August, Central Bank representatives will be giving out Sand Dollars at Solomon's Yamacro. Show your Sand Dollar-enabled digital wallet at the door and receive $20. Spend $18 or more in Sand Dollars at the register and get $5 back when you leave the store. This offer is limited to the first 100 customers to show their Sand Dollar-enabled wallet at each location. One top-up per person, so as many people as possible can experience the Sand Dollar. For more details, visit any of the Sand Dollar social media pages or call 302-9880. That's 302-9880. And now to our new on-the-clock Sand Dollar Trivia giveaway. Every day for the next 3 months, we will be giving away Sand Dollars to digital wallet holders. Every week, players can win up to $300 in Sand Dollars. To be eligible to win, you must have a digital wallet and answer the trivia question correctly. When you call in, give the producer your name and number and digital wallet provider. If you answer the question correctly, you will be transferred. You'll be transferred back to the producer to confirm your information so that I can transfer the funds to your digital wallet. Remember, listeners are restricted to one transfer for the duration. You can only win once. I'm throwing out the first question of the day right now. Here are the numbers to call, 323-6232. 325-4316, 325-4259, 242-300-5720. That's 242-300-5720 for people in the Bahamas but not in New Providence. Now, for the text winners, you must include your wallet information. You must include your wallet information with your text answer. If it does not include your wallet information, I cannot accept it as a correct answer. So here is the first trivia question for the day. On what day does the Emancipation Day holiday fall this year? On what day does the Emancipation Day holiday fall this year? Again, on what day does the Emancipation Day holiday fall this year? Again, the numbers to call 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, 242-300-5720. That's 242-300-5720. All right. I see we got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Yeah, is it the first Monday in August?
Yes. It is always the first Monday in August. Absolutely. It was a trick question.
Yeah.
But you were not tricked. Thank you very much. Now, I'm going to, the producer's going to take you back over, and you gave him your wallet information, right?
Okay, I'll give it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Don't hang up. If you get disconnected, you must call back. Thank you so much. Caller, that's right. Emancipation Day holiday always falls on a Monday. It always falls on the first Monday in August. Good morning. Now, I want to say sad news, because today we're going to remember a giant of a man. And I'm going to read from the official statement from Prime Minister Davis on the passing of educator and advocate Mr. Eris Munka. With profound sadness, we mourn the loss of one of Cat Island's greatest sons. Mr. Eris Munka, as a fellow Cat Islander, his loss feels deeply personal to me. Mr. Munka was not just an accomplished educator and tireless advocate for our island, he was also a dear friend. On behalf of my wife, Ann Davis, and me, I want to extend my heartfelt condolences to his family and all who knew and loved him. His life was devoted to education, and his legacy in this field is unparalleled. From his early days as a teacher to his role as principal, district superintendent, and later as college lecturer, Eris's passion for education shone brightly. He believed in the transformative power of knowledge and worked tirelessly to instill this in the hearts and minds of countless young Bahamians. Eris's passion for our island was ever present, but Eris's contributions extended beyond education and advocacy. He was also a gifted author and respected historian. His writings, rich with the culture and history of the Bahamas, will continue to enlighten and inspire future generations. In addition, Eris was one of the founding members of the Teachers Cooperative Credit Union. His work establishing this solidified his dedication to the welfare and prosperity of his fellow Bahamians. Today we mourn a giant among men, a great Bahamian, and a proud son of Cat Island. My thoughts and prayers are with his family and all who mourn his passing. But even as we grieve, we also remember and celebrate the life of a truly extraordinary individual. Eris Munka has left an indelible mark on our community and our country. His spirit will continue to inspire us. May his soul rest in peace. That was an excerpt from the tribute given by the Prime Minister of the Bahamas and the representative for Cat Island. And just a note, in case you didn't know, Eris Munka wrote Guanahani, Columbus's San Salvador, Our Cat Island, City on a Hill, an intriguing read correcting the record as to Columbus's true place of landfall in the Bahamas. Cat Island was known as San Salvador from the discovery of the Bahama Islands for 434 years until an act of parliament removed the name and gave it to Watling's Island. This is that San Salvador story, the truth of Columbus's voyage. Again, Guanahani, Columbus's San Salvador, Arquette Island, City on a Hill, is but one of the treasures that Mr. Eris Munka has left with us, his fellow Bahamians. Again, a giant of a man who's touched, in a positive way, everyone's life that he has been fortunate enough to interact with. A good morning. At some point, I already told the producer, we play in Cat Island music today, maybe all week, in honor of Mr. Munka and his contributions to the country. on to the first topic of the day. Montague Ramp and Dock. Just a quick note, I was on the dock this weekend buying some fish. It's a great place to get fresh fish. And if you were ever wondering why the price of fish at the ramp or the dock is sort of higher than in the fish house, it's because you're typically getting fresher fish when you go to the ramp or the dock. So, Montague Ramp and Dock. The bathroom is still not open and operational. This weekend while I was on the dock, I watched a number of charters, right? Unload guests, Montague Dock. Guests file off the boat onto the dock and head directly to the bathroom, which they find is still closed. I don't want, let me make this clear. I am bringing my concerns about Montague Ramp and the dock to the public's attention. The people working out there often tell me, listen, we just hustling. We don't want to cause a problem. We don't want conflict. We just need the tools necessary for us to be able to work and to multiply our investments. So we're asking the ministry, I'm asking the Ministry of Public Works to please focus on getting the bathroom on the Montague Ramp side of Montague Beach up and running. Again, we know that the cause of the problem is that someone stole the water pumps from both bathrooms. The bathroom by the fort is operating. Too much movement on the beach in that area for there to only be one bathroom. And so, some suggestions. Can we install the new pump and equipment inside the bathroom structure to keep it secure? Can we ensure that there is CCTV coverage of the area to deter theft in that area? And it would also support other monitoring activity. For instance, there is a large dumpster placed on the ramp for the use of the businesses that operate on the ramp. But members of the public will come and dump in that dumpster, not taking into consideration the needs of the vendors, Montague, or the volume of trash that they generate in that space. Someone also told me that at a recent event on Montague Beach that a large number of porta-potties and placed at the site to accommodate the guests of the event. And I ask, would the money have spent on the portable toilets been sufficient to get the Montague Ramp bathroom operational? See, charters and taxis bring hundreds of tourists to the dock and ramp every week. Hundreds bordering on a couple thousand every week. Another note, why not post lifeguards at the beach with basic EMT training for emergencies and charter emergencies, and also store basic first aid equipment in the bathroom in a secure locker for lifeguards and EMT staff. Another note, the manhole at the entrance and exit of Montague Ramp needs to be addressed quickly. The vendors there, a lot of them are family island rooted, and so, you know, they don't rely or wait on government to fix things, but this particular issue is infrastructural, and the utilities company responsible, please, they need to come out and assess and fix their infrastructure at the entrance to Montague Ramp. Also, another note, we just need more garbage receptacles on the beach, the park, and the ramp. Larger receptacles that can hold and store garbage, prevent dogs and rats, But more importantly, it's time to assess whether we need to begin to assign staff to parks and beaches so they're present for the shift and are constantly monitoring the space and picking up garbage. That takes us to Sanders Beach. Bathrooms are also closed at Sanders Beach for an inordinate and indefinite amount of time. We're asking that the authorities responsible please tend to that beach. And if the authorities, if the Ministry of Works or Beaches and Parks are not responsible for fixing the bathroom or ensuring that it's operational, who is the agency that provides oversight and ensures that those who are responsible are doing their jobs? Also, a listener told me that the sea grape trees that fell in a recent storm at Saunders Beach are still alive and can continue to thrive if they are tended to and propped up properly. They also made a note that attention needs to be paid to the general maintenance of the park at Saunders Beach. Now, those are just some of the things that our fishermen and the auxiliary staff, the cleanup men, the vendors, the people who sell the fish are dealing with as they try to make a living. And then we see that boat registration fees have increased and the lobster price has decreased, and this could turn into a perfect storm for fishermen and vendors and people in the industry that are already facing the hardships of ever-increasing gas prices. And another issue that's on the table, where is all the ice? So I'm going to read from a couple of stories quickly so we could get a sense of what our local fishermen are up against a day before lobster season opens for the year. I know most people wouldn't think that this is a big issue, but for people who rely on the fishing industry to support themselves, they primarily, or the majority of them, lobster season is Christmas time for fishermen. So I got a couple of articles here for people who have been following or who want to follow the story. And the story is interesting to me for a couple of reasons. See, this perfect storm, potential perfect storm, is not just going to impact local fishermen. In the short term, it's just fishermen, they could find the money, they could take out a loan, they could work hard and pay back any money they owe at the end of a good season. But the potential impact of this perfect storm can be long-term and widespread. So let's start with this first article. Government to increase annual boat registration fees while eliminating duty and VAT on new vessels. Government to increase annual boat registration fees while eliminating duty and VAT on new vessels. This is the Nassau Tribune from the 8th of June. The government is increasing annual boat registration fees while eliminating duty and value-added tax on vessel purchases. According to an amendment to the Boat Registration Act, tabled in the House of Assembly yesterday, that would have been the 7th of June, annual fees for boats under 15 feet will be $36 if the legislation is passed, up from $30. Owners of boats between 15 and 25 feet in length will pay $60, up from $50. Fees for boats between 25 and 50 feet will increase to $120, up from $100, while fees for boats between 50 and 100 feet will increase from $200 to $240. Owners of boats 100 feet or more will pay an annual fee of $480, up from $400. For the transfer of registrations, the fee will increase from $10 to $100. This would be done in several ways. Annual payment for boat inspections and master license fees will also increase, and it will be done in several ways, adopting new policies which encourage compliance, educating law enforcement agencies on maritime revenue opportunities, and implementing a new compliance strategy in which updated penalties for beacher. This would include using technology to properly assess entities which utilize the seaboard for docks, marinas, and other purposes. So the government, the prime minister has announced that there's been a regime change in the fishing, in the boat space, and in the fishing industry. And, well, boy, is it exciting. Here's another story. Government to eliminate duty and VAT on boat registration. The government's challenges to vessel registration could have the knock-on effect of allowing Bahamians to get into the yacht chartering business, become charter brokers, and increase the amount of Bahamians becoming mates on ships, the chief of Bay Street Marina, Peter Maury, said yesterday. This is a June 8th article from the Nassau Guardian. Prime Minister and Minister of Finance Philip Davis, who opened a debate on the budget in the House, explained that government plans to eliminate duty and VAT value-added tax on boat registrations and replace it with a schedule of fees for registration in an effort to get more pleasure vessels flying the Bahamian flag. Right, so we have this increase in boat fees and then a policy to remove VAT and duty off of boats. The Prime Minister says that it's in an attempt to get more pleasure vessels flying the Bahamian flag. But has the government taken into account the impact of these policy changes on the local fishing industry? The NFA, that's the National Fisheries Association Secretary, Mr. Malis, suggests that they haven't. Here is another story. Fishing distress over boat registration hike. Nassau Tribune, 6th of July. With the budget's fee and other reforms now passed into law and in effect, fishermen and other Bahamian boat owners are only now just waking up to the scale of the increases imposed in the Water Skiing and Motor Boat Control Amendment Bill 2023. And its implications for their interests and livelihoods. Commercial fishermen enjoyed a duty exemption on boats imported into the Bahamas. The Davis administration in the budget eliminated the VAT and customs duties previously levied on private vessels coming into the Bahamas. Mr. Malis, though, said the fishing industry was awaiting clarity from Michael Halkidis, Minister for Economic Affairs, on whether boats imported for commercial fishing will also be exempt from VAT. For a 20 to 29-foot vessel, which is a pretty average-sized commercial fishing vessel, it's gone from $20 to $700 for the annual registration fee. It's absurd. We understand the government needs money. We really, really do understand. But how easy is it for someone with a 50-foot, 10-million yacht to pay a $10,000 first-time registration fee compared to a fisherman who has to take out loans and spend thousands of dollars on essential infrastructure for their business. That $10,000 charge is a substantial amount. One boat owner speaking on condition of anonymity yesterday said it will hurt small fishermen, subsistence people. It's going to hurt your jet ski and boat and tour boat operators, people like that. It's ludicrous, really. It's just such a big one-time jump between the old rates and the new. It's the 20-foot to 50-foot that is going to kill Bahamians. They're not thinking it through, obviously. We stick a pin there just for a second. And so fishermen are faced with sort of two issues, a drastic increase in the amount of time from the implementation of the fees to the beginning of the biggest season of the year. Now, there's another article, boat registration fee hikes, not a tax grab. Nassau Tribune, 7th of July. The significant hikes in boat registration fees are not designed as a tax grab, the New Providence Port Authority's chairman asserted yesterday, adding that the new regime will be a game changer for compliance and competitiveness. The changes to the boat registration and water skiing and motorboat acts also introduce an annual inspection fee regime with charges based on vessel length. Mr. LaRota said this was designed to bring the Bahamas into line with international best practices and regulatory standards by ending the previously voluntary inspection regime for private craft. The inspection fee, which is new, we have to move to a system where inspections are mandatory, he told the Tribune. All right. So here we have the chairman from the New Providence Port Authority explaining that the new tax is not a, or the new fees are not a tax grab, but are a reflection of a shift in the space to foster compliance and competitiveness. I like this discussion about boat inspections. We're talking about the safety of people on the water, whether they're fishermen, whether they're tourists, whether they're Bahamians. This is a good idea. And it's a very good article, one you need to read to understand what's happening in the space. To our last article before we take a break, lobster season fares over boat registration fee reform. This is from the 19th of July. Bahamian fishermen were yesterday, quote, eagerly awaiting, close quote, promised revisions to the over tenfold increases in annual boat registration fees amid fares. The reforms will not take effect before lobster season's August 1st start. Paul Malis, the National Fisheries Association Secretary, told Tribune Business that following meetings with cabinet ministers and port department officials, the industry had been informed that there would be increases and that the schedule would be shifted. However, no timeline for when the changes are to be introduced has been confirmed. And he voiced concern that fishermen who have vessels, because they only take them out on the water when lobster season begins, will be hit with the current higher fee hikes because the reforms will not be implemented by August 1st. Calling on the government to provide a credit for future annual boat registration fees to fishermen caught in this predicament, Mr. Mailer said the fallout and subsequent pushback to the hikes unveiled with the 2023-2024 budget were entirely avoidable if the fishing industry had been consulted beforehand. Describing the NFA and other fisheries industry groups as blindsided by both the increases and their magnitude, he also urged the government to distinguish between Bahamian-owned and foreign-owned vessels in the registration fee structure. Now, I did lie. I got one more story before we take a pause. Lobster fishermen face bad situation all around. This is a doozy. Coming right now, Paul Malis, NFA secretary, told Tribune Business that the sector was facing a drastic decrease in lobster prices, with wholesale buyers indicating that they may slump by more than 50% compared to just 2 years ago, with diesel prices still over $6 per gallon and up to tenfold increases in boat registration fees that have yet to be adjusted. He argued that additional cost pressures might drive some fishermen to reconsider whether to go out at all this crawfish season or switch to catching fish. Right now, going into the season, I would say lobster fishermen are a bit concerned because of the overall increase in the cost of business at the moment. We're getting reports from some of the buyers that they have a lobster price going into the season is anywhere from $8 to $9 a pound, which is on the low end of the spectrum. That has a lot of fishermen concerned. It has me very concerned there. And like I said, I'm going to stick a pin right there. I wanted to bring attention to this situation, and I wanted to highlight the articles in the local media recently detailing the progress, the introduction of the new fees, and the impact it's having on the lobster industry, specifically the fishing industry as a whole, not just fishermen, how it will impact everybody in that space. I think it's an important space to pay attention to, because a large number of Bahamians have been able to support themselves and support their communities, right? Not just with fishing, but specifically with lobster harvest. And I hope the powers that be, state actors, the environmentalists, the researchers, and the economists have come together to form an organization or a space that they can follow this movement. This is troubling to me, the impact, how it can potentially impact food security and food sovereignty in the short term and in the long term is something I don't think that the decision makers have seriously considered. See, it's not just about this lobster season and whether somebody can make a killing this lobster season. It's about whether a fisherman will make enough money in this key season of the year to support their business. Remember, not just their business, school starts in a month. And this is the time that people rely on traditionally to generate the revenue, the money necessary to pay school fees, to pay university school fees, to buy to get themselves and their children prepared for the new school year. What is going to be the impact on our local fish consumption? Again, I think it should be against the law to sell swai and tilapia in the largest archipelago in the region. That we have not figured out how to preserve and sustain our most favorite fish stocks in our very own ocean is troubling. What would be even more troubling is that we would have a cadre, a portfolio of some of the world's leading environmentalists and researchers in country, and we would not be tapping into their expertise to develop policies to protect not just a treasured industry, but our culture and our heritage. These are people that are often forgotten because we think, oh, they make plenty of money. They don't need us. They lobster fishermen, look at them, buy them in Spanish wells. They are unable to do it if the right conditions are not in place. These articles are very good. In one of the articles, I want to just read this point. The Bahamas has a rating. We have a special designation. Here we go. I think this is from Mr. Malis. We're hoping for the best, but it doesn't sound so. Mr. Malis, meanwhile, also voiced disappointment that international buyers in markets such as the U.S., Europe, and Canada appear to be, quote, close quotes, overlooking the Bahamas' Marine Stewardship Council certification, which highlights this nation's status as a country committed to the sustainability of its lobster and wider fisheries industries. Quote, buyers across the world can look at the Bahamas and say it's a sustainable source of spiny lobster tails, the NFA explained. What must be happening is that buyers are overlooking that and choosing to go with the lowest price rather than sustainable price. It's quite frustrating for us. It's also frustrating because you know there's a very good chance that the lobster that's being sold in a foreign jurisdiction close to the Bahamas may have been harvested or poached from the Bahamas. Frustrating. So just before we go, you know, I want to throw a couple of questions out there. With the potential, with the risk of a large number of fishermen not registering the boats, not going out commercially to fish, to harvest crawfish, what does that mean, right? Well, it means that the water, there are going to be less eyes on the water, which means that the poachers, both the poachers from the south and the fancy foreign poachers from the north, you know, when you do bad things from the north, it's a different name entirely, right? Where will the eyes be? Are the powers that be coordinating with the Royal Bahamas Defense Force to figure out if we can deputize, pay and deputize some of these fishermen who are not going out to fish to go out to patrol for poachers and relay location information to the relevant Defense Force agencies? right? What happens if the fishermen don't go out on the water? Will they go out and just catch fish? Will they go out and not catch lobster? Will all of this year's lobster be sold in foreign jurisdictions, having been poached by foreigners? What's the plan and what's the response? And what are ordinary people supposed to do to support their local fishing industry, to support their local fishermen, their community fishermen? Somebody tell us what to do. There may be trouble ahead. Not sure if anybody is watching. Producer, take us to a break. You guys, thank you for tuning in to this particular conversation. It's important. It's something that we need to watch. And our local fishermen are busy fishing, and they're relying on us, the general public, to pay attention to these things and support them, right? Whether we agree with them or not, we could support them by being informed citizens and contributing to the discussion where necessary. You guys, thank you very much. We go into a break. When we get back from the break, second trivia question for the day, and then we're getting into the headlines. You're on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, on the clock. Don't go anywhere.
Yeah, boy. Daisy Maki, boy, falling, falling, Maki. Play your more organ. Beep, 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 beep. Yeah, buddy, y'all sounding good, you know. Oscar, Oscar from Carolina. Blood us through soda bottles. Ben Strawn, taking blood out Constantine. Another fee for, fee for, fee for. Gone to Get Island, gone to Get Island. Join the rig and scrape back. Gone to Get Island, oh.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Parents, it's that sweet time of year again.
The kids are going back to school, so pick up your copy of the Nassar Guardians Back to School Supplement, cuz
it's the most wonderful time of the year.
Put your students in the latest styles at the lowest prices, because summer break is almost over, and our Back to School Supplement is filled with brand name back prices, store locations, hours, and contact details.
It's the happiest season of all.
Advertisers, call the Nassar Guardian today at 302-2300 or call your account executive to get in on the 2-for-1 insertion deal. If it's uniforms, shoes, books, backpacks, calculators, art supplies, laptops, tablets, or whatever is on your back-to-school supply list, your ad should be in the Nassar Guardian's back-to-school supplement.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Wait, why you look so mashed up? Like clothes at the washer.
No, no, boy. Just a hard day. What?
Hard day? What happened? The breakfast lady ran out of tuna and gritsy.
We need to start joking with everything, you know. This serious, boy. This real serious, boy.
Wait, what's serious? Tell me.
All right, well, today, boss gave us boy one big, big contract. And nobody else get a chance and nobody say nothing.
Boy, you know that ain't right. You know government contracts ain't supposed to go that way.
Yeah, but nobody saying nothing. Boss man just tell people to sign the papers. Then he send me to meet his boy downtown and collect this envelope.
You need to tell somebody. You need to become a whistleblower.
You know I's a real man, but I never blow no whistle. I be drunk all my life in Junkano.
No way. A whistleblower is someone who tells people what they see when they see something wrong happening at work.
But I ain't no whistleblower, and I ain't no snitch. I still wait there, you know.
But ain't nobody gonna know it's you. All you gotta do is call Crime Stoppers, or you could text them from inside the Crock Crime Bahamas app. They don't ask about you, and your call goes straight through to Miami, so nobody know who you is. And if you text, your message get mixed up like Kong Salad.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
I was born on TB Kid Island. Some people work hard all week, but come Friday and Saturday, they go down to the old schoolhouse and dance to the Rickens Quick Band. I want you to meet some of them right now. My Gertie, old lady, L woman, come here, gal. Go on the dresser, get that old beep, 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 beep. Jeep, Jeep Smith, go out there in the woodshed, get that old saw which is cut up wood with, get that old gabber mag for the kitchen and scrape that saw. Please, boy, go outside, you know that goat we killed yesterday. Get that old Robin Hood, put drum cake,
Good morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. You're on the clock. Here is our second on the clock giveaway for the day. Numbers to call 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. 242-300-5720. That's 242-300-5720. The text line 422-GR96. Remember, if you answer the question by text, you have to include your wallet information in the text. Here is the question. Which island in Eleuthera once housed the capital of the Bahamas? Which island in Eleuthera was once the capital of the Bahamas? Which island in Eleuthera was once the capital of the Bahamas? That's the question. Second question for the day, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, 242-300-5720. That's 242-300-5720. Text line 422-GR96, 422-4796 must include your wallet information in the text. I get a quick text there that says, Department of Environmental Health, when will you have more rat poison? I got a listener in South Dakota. I was going to say good morning, South Dakota, but I will say good morning to Miss Russell. Good morning, Miss Russell. I hope you're having a wonderful, wonderful day. It must be a wonderful day because there's still star fruit, ganep, mango, papaya, dilly, cherry, mulberry, soursop, sugar apple, breadfruit, avocado, everything upon ground. It's a beautiful day. Now, let's get to the second story. BPL CEO, quote, too risky, close quotes, to run all engines at once. Reading from today's Guardian. Although Bahamas Power and Light's Wärtsilä engines are, quote, the most efficient, close quote, in BPL's fleet, it is, quote, too risky, close quotes, to run all seven of those engines at once, due to the structural integrity of the Clifton Pier building where the engines are housed, company CEO Siobhan Cambridge said yesterday. Now, let's stick a pin. Good morning, Mr. Newry. How are you doing?
Good morning this morning. How are you doing, Aaron Green? It's a pleasure to be on your show. Thank you for allowing me to be on.
Yes, sir.
It's raining outside.
It is?
I mean, thunder and lightning storm. I see we have a warning saying, expect hail.
Hail?
So you can rain that hard, so expect hail.
What? Okay, and pause. See,
go ahead.
Because when you say expect hail, right, that's a whole new cultural disposition.
My child is excited because she never saw hail, so she's hoping and looking now for the rain.
Hopefully she's looking from inside the house,
yes,
and not outside, because she'll be excited by hail in her head.
She's afraid of thunder, so this thunder has her knocked down. So I want to be a shout-out to my stepfather, Jack Colebrook, now. He's scared, terrified of thunder, too. So I'm sure that he locked up his house. He's in the bathroom someplace.
Chilling.
Just waiting.
Yeah. Don't be making fun, you know, because, it's two things.
You don't like loud noise.
Two new things in our living space that we have to deal with, tornadoes, mm-hmm, and now hail.
Yes.
Right? People who know about tornadoes know, go in the bathroom, lay in the tub.
Yes.
Cover yourself with something and try laying in the tub, right?
Yes.
Bang.
Good. But yes, there's a warning out there now. But we're sticking a pin there, and
right,
I'm going to bait you and ask you, why do you want to stick a pin there?
Because I want to reference things that we heard earlier in the week and in the month from both Siobhan Cambridge, the CEO of BPL,
okay,
and the Prime Minister, and Mr. Michael Pintard, the leader of the opposition.
They seem to be in two different cars.
They seem to be on two different planets.
But definitely, they're not in the same Honda Accord.
No.
They're not in the one Accord at all.
No, not at all. If last week, we were discussing what appeared to be a contradiction in statements between the Prime Minister, Mr. Brave Davis, mm-hmm. who had said none of the engines ever worked.
Never worked. They still ain't working.
And Mr. Siobhan Cambridge, CEO of BPL, who said, listen, no, that's not true. Five of the engines operating right now.
Hold on. He just didn't say that. He said they're the most efficient of all the other engines.
Right.
See, something is wrong. I, personally, me, C.A. Nuri, tend to get defensive when people mm-hmm. challenge my prime minister.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure who this Mr. Siobhan is to try to re-explain what my prime minister then announced. So I'm kind of uneasy with the CEO, and I need to tell him, stop it.
Mm-hmm.
If the prime minister say he ain't working, the engines ain't working. Full stop. I old school, like Lyndon Pindlin time. If it ain't working, if I tell you it ain't working. Ain't you coming back and trying
but
to
correct
me.
No. Surely that's not. There's a reason why BPL is there's a reason why BEC is a quasi-governmental corporation with a management company to manage it. That suggests that Ministry of Works isn't managing it. And the Prime Minister and the Cabinet Office isn't managing it. A BPL, a management entity, is managing BEC. So I expect the head of the management entity to know what's happening. I don't expect the Prime Minister to know more than the CEO knows.
Everything that is happening in the Bahamas. And I'm not sure where you're going down. What type of rabbit hole you trying to suggest, Aaron Green? But if our prime minister say the Wärtsilä engines aren't working, they ain't working.
But listen, I don't understand that, right? Because Michael Pintard says, I got to pull.
He ain't prime minister.
You're absolutely right.
He need to work on his own party. Fix that.
He's not prime minister, and I would argue that while he was sitting in cabinet in the last administration, he would have had an opportunity to fix some of these legacy issues that compound the problem.
They fixed it.
So let me read from the Tribune article, Pintard PM shamefully wrong on Wärtsilä. This is in today's Tribune. Free National Movement leader Michael Pintard said Prime Minister Brave Davis' comments about BPL's Wärtsilä engines in the House of Assembly last week were, quote, shamefully wrong, close quotes, and conflict with the account of BPL CEO Cambridge. I'm going to flip over to page 4 and continue reading. Mr. Davis said on Wednesday that Wärtsilä's engines, hey, producer, is that a caller for the trivia? That Wärtsilä's engines never worked properly and described the situation as rotten. Mr. Pintard criticized both Mr. Davis and Minister of Works and Utilities Alfred Sayers. The Prime Minister seeks to run from the fact that the increase of cost of electricity is directly related to his and Minister Sayers' bad decision, making which they sought to hide then and seek to hide now, Mr. Pintard said. The Prime Minister's assertion that the Station A Wärtsilä plant never worked fully is not correct. The log files would show that all 7 engines were running simultaneously when load demands required. Mr. Pintard challenged the Prime Minister to bring the log files for the Wärtsilä plant to the House of Assembly. He said Mr. Davis has failed to provide a comprehensive plan for BPL. I want to go back to the Guardian article, right? Although BPL's Wärtsilä engines are the most efficient in BPL's fleet, it is too risky to run all 7 of those engines at once due to the structural integrity of the Clifton Pier building where the engines are housed, company CEO Siobhan Cambridge said yesterday. Cambridge made the statement when asked to explain what Prime Minister Philip Davis meant when he told the House of Assembly last Wednesday, quote, you will find that those engines were constructed in a dilapidated building. Therefore, they can't run for fear that the building will collapse on it.
What? Say it again?
Cambridge made the statement when asked to explain what Prime Minister Philip he told the House of Assembly last Wednesday. This is what the Prime Minister said. You will find that those engines were constructed in a dilapidated building. Therefore, they can't run for fear that the building will collapse on it. The CEO said that that was a reference to the risk of running all the engines at one time. Quote, the engines were ran, let's say four, and I'm turning to page six now, let's say for the purpose of accepting them. They were ran individually to show that they can run, and there's been one or two occasions where they attempted to run all seven at one time. But the vibration that they create exacerbated an existing spalling problem that exists at the structure they were in, he explained. This was a problem that was known when this decision was made to put the engines in there. But it was supposed to be that they were going to undertake some reinforcing work in correcting some of the spalling issues, which was attempted. But once the engines were in there and they started to run them, the vibrations and what have you resulted in some more of the concrete loosening. So over time, and I guess with the advice of some of the experts who've been and had a look at the building, posted that because of the spalling, that we do not run all seven of the engines at one time, close quotes. I want to stick a pin there because I'm certain that Mr. Cambridge gave all of us the impression that the only reason that the seven engines weren't all running at the same time mm-hmm. was because that the maintenance
yes.
policy,
yes.
strategy,
yes.
and schedule required two engines to be offline for maintenance at a time.
I smell inconsistency.
At no point in time did somebody say, the building shaky like my back teeth.
Say the building rotten.
Listen, I...
But which is it? Is it that they're during maintenance, that's why they're not online? Or is it that the building might collapse, that's why the seven is not running?
Listen...
Who to believe?
There's not enough clarity.
See why I only trust my prime minister?
No, you see why I insist on harping on this BPL issue for decades to the point where people in the industry don't even like to look at me anymore because transparency in this space. Y'all are playing too much politics and you are tarnishing and sullying the names and the reputations of professionals because y'all insist on playing politics when good governance is required.
But Aaron, now you know. Now you know it's the building. What next?
The building.
And the thing is that a report was given to the then government. This is like 7, 8, 9 years ago. To say that the building is not good. That it needs to be reinforced. And of course, almost a decade later...
It's nothing. Listen, we're still waiting for the publication of the investigation into the 2018 fire at the BPL plant.
You still waiting on that?
Of course, because I refuse to accept the response. Well, somebody leaked it, so you can't see it now. I mean, nobody is accepting that.
I accepted it. I moved on.
You just paid the light bill?
Yeah, no.
No, I don't pay the light bill either. I can be honest with you. I don't. But I feel everybody that pays the light bill because for 30 plus years, it's been an energy crisis. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine that people have just been consistently paying power bills with no idea of how the money is being spent, who is receiving the money, the state of BPL, the status of the equipment, where taxpayer dollars are going. And now they're attempting to tell us that when monies are paid out, and we know that BPL is in a process where a determination is being made of where the monies are going to be paid out to people who have sued, that we're not going to know how much money was paid out, even. It's at the point where we need a commission of inquiry, but not a commission of inquiry because you don't have any real enforcement mechanisms with that. But we need some sort of legal mechanism that can demand and extract clarity in the status of BPL.
We can talk about that. Legal mechanism that demands clarity. But my question to you is, if we get these other two generators up and running, will there still be load shedding?
But you're missing the point. Does not mean this. Apparently, they're just down for their regular maintenance schedule. The question is, can they run all seven at the same time? And Michael Pintard said they've been running, under his administration, they run all seven at the same time.
And then the CEO, Sharon...
Mr. Yuri, we all out of time. Oh. Maybe we could transition into your hour.
To talk with this, I'll give you 20 minutes. I'll give you 20 minutes just to talk about this.
Did your power go off this weekend?
Of course it went off this weekend. I'm new to that. This is a part of life in the Bahamas.
What are they putting in the air in Fox Hill Village, sir?
Yeah.
Producer, play that music for me. Guys, as we close out the show, I've got a winner for the second trivia question for the day. Winner got the correct answer. The answer is Harbour Island.
The answer is Harbour Island.
Yeah, the answer is Harbour Island. Lord Dunmore lived in Harbour Island.
Yes.
At the time, it was the capital.
Yes.
Right? I'm not exactly sure why. Like, did they name it the capital and he moved there? Or was it the capital because he was there and that's where all
you
the
know,
activity
like,
took
place? You know, Washington, D.C. is a district?
Yeah.
Harbour Island is actually legally a district. That's a different story altogether. We need someone to explain all of these things to us.
Minister Clay Sweeten, after you rest up after that game last night, carrying on like a NBA star, we invite you to talk. Very interesting, Mr. Nuri.
Can you explain what that means?
It may be the root of why Harbour Island develops differently, socially, culturally, economically. Anyway, we're all out of time, man, Mr. Nuri. Thank you for joining me this morning. You guys, check out those stories. Pay attention to what's happening in the fisheries industry. Guardian Radio AM and CA Nuri is up next.
Ben Spron, taking brother Constantine, and a fee for. Gone to Kid Island, gone to Kid Island.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.